It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. What a day to focus on the elections in Israel, the tenuous relationship between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu, and what's coming next.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Race that could see Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu swept from power.
And it's looking increasingly unlikely that Benjamin Netanyahu will be able to do that.
Desperate times call for desperate measures for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
It's looking like Bibi Netanyahu is in real trouble.
Benjamin Netanyahu is facing serious trouble.
Could Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu actually lose his bid for re-election? He's in serious trouble.
Netanyahu may be in trouble.
Oh, lo and behold, he was elected, re-elected. Actually, his party, Likud, came out very strong with 30 seats, 30 mandates in the parliament. And it looks like we'll form a right-wing government that will be at complete odds with the current administration in the United States. What do you know? Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. We've got a whole lot of ground to cover today, a lot to talk about. Another radical Islamic terror attack, this time in Tunisia, with many killed in a museum attack, rocking that nation. But I want to open the phone lines to any Jewish-related question that you have. Any Jewish-related question, comment, concern relating to Israel, relating to radical Islam, Middle East, Hebrew Bible, Jewish theology, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Let me put out one thing, and then I've got to give you a quick word about yesterday's broadcast. We often hear the accusation that Israel is an apartheid state. And I'm looking at different articles. One, for example, White House deeply concerned by, quote, divisive anti-Arabic rhetoric during Israeli election. This was a live blog bringing in reporting from different Israeli newspapers and agencies. And what's fascinating is this. Okay, the number one party, the party that got the most votes, was Likud. So this is Prime Minister Netanyahu's party. Okay, that got the most seats, 30. Next was Zionist Union, which is left-wing, Likud right-wing. They got 24. That's what was expected, and that's what happened. They got their 24 seats. But the third biggest party to get votes was the Joint Arab List, which got 14 seats. 14 seats. And then after that, Yesh Atid, and then Kulanu, and then the ultra-Orthodox Jewish parties, Shas, got 7, and then another United Torah party got 7, and down we go. But the third biggest was the Joint Arab List. So you are talking about over 10% of the seats of the Knesset are held by an Arab party. That's not how an apartheid state operates. That's not how it operates. You say, no, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about Arabs within Israel. We're talking about the Palestinians living in the West Bank and Gaza. Well, the difference there is that they have not sought to live peacefully within the same borders with Israel. And that's why you've got the great tension and pressure. Okay, yesterday, I'm doing the broadcast, my live show as always. And I'm seeing calls coming in for a completely different subject, completely unrelated subject. What happened was our satellite transmission, there was new equipment. It failed. We didn't know it. We were live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and not the rest of the country. You were hearing a different show. I believe many of you heard an interview I did, 4 years ago with Reinhard Bonnke, one of the world's great evangelists in this generation. So wonderfully edifying interview, but it wasn't the live broadcast. So we're trying to sort out where are these calls coming from. Anyway, great to be with you on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire, Michael Brown. Delighted to be with you. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-348-7884. Let me just sort things out a little bit more, if I may, in terms of the elections. Right now, the talk is that President Obama will go straight to the UN and will bypass Israel in pushing for a two-state solution. There is a statement that I read by one journalist who said that the Israeli people have voted that life is more important than quality of life. In other words, by voting for Likud, they were saying we want our security. We don't want to be killed by terrorists or by nuclear weapons from Iran. We want our security rather than focusing on the economy, even though there are massive economic issues and all types of red tape issues that get in the way of the economy prospering, and some say there are monopolies that have to be broken up, etc. The concern, though, is because Prime Minister Netanyahu basically said, forget anything I've said in the past, there cannot and will not be a two-state solution, that because President Obama, Secretary of State Kerry, and others, and this goes back, President Bush wanted a two-state solution, President Clinton. So this is longstanding U.S. policy that needs to be a two-state solution, that rather than working with Israel, because it's a non-workable relationship right now between Obama and Netanyahu, that the attempt will be made to go to the UN and to kind of force Israel's hand to make way for a two-state solution that cannot have a good ending. No way that that ends well for America or for Israel, in my view. Driving to the office today, was coming in at a different time. I flipped the radio on, was listening to the beginning of Rush Limbaugh's show, and he actually said that this could be a real time of danger, and I didn't get to hear the rest of what he was saying. I had to run an errand for my dear, sweet 92-year-old mom and take care of that. But the point he was making is with President Obama, lame duck president, now in other words, the last 2 years, and kind of do what he wants to do without worrying about re-election issues, and this happens with other presidents as well, with the Congress decidedly Republican, so it puts him in a situation of he may just try to do whatever he can do, period. So you have that going on. Then you have Prime Minister Netanyahu getting a strong mandate from his nation saying, we want security, and we want you to stand for what you're standing for. It makes for something very, very tenuous, difficult, and we really need to pray for America's well-being and for Israel's well-being. Check out my latest article, Can Israel Survive? I lay out the tensions within Israel, the challenges within the nation, the great divisions, and yet this underlying unity, and all of the threats to Israel from the outside asking, can Israel survive? Now, my answer is decidedly yes, but that's not because of America's help or because of Israel's outstanding military. That's because of the promises of God. That's the only reason Israel exists today, is because of the promises of God. So read that article. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article. A whole lot more to cover, to discuss implications of the elections, ongoing issues in terms of America and Israel. I want to make this last point, and phone lines are jammed, so I want to try to get to the phones a little earlier today on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. The talking points from the left-wing press and media and from the Obama administration, the talking points keep talking about the campaign being divisive and the accusation that what Prime Minister Netanyahu did and said was racist, 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 racist. So how do we sort that out? Well, in particular, there is the issue of Prime Minister Netanyahu saying that Arabs were being bused in large numbers out to vote. was that racist? Well, if it's a factual report, I don't know how it would be racist. You say, but isn't that divisive to say it? Well, let's have a scenario here in America. Let's just say there was a major immigration bill that was being voted on, and it was going to affect many Hispanic Americans, and someone felt the bill would be unhelpful to America and destructive for America. They were campaigning against it, and then on Election Day, they noticed irregularities where large numbers of Hispanics who weren't normally voting were being bussed in by another party to get the bill through. And they said, hey, I want to draw attention to that. That's not right, or that's violating rules. Is that racist? Well, no. What if it was a bill that was a particular bill that was going to affect a certain sector of the Jewish community, and you notice that ultra-Orthodox Jews who weren't only voting were being bussed into a certain district and raised that issue? So if it's factually true and it's not calling people racist, it's simply saying this is what's happening, I don't know how that is racist or divisive. Shouldn't the focus be put on, was it wrong? Were laws broken? Was something done that was unethical? All right, 866-34-TRUTH. A whole bunch of things to talk about, but remember, God sits on the throne. I posted this. I sent it out on social media with a smile. I said, I'm going to be really bold. I'm going to go out on a limb and make a prediction. And this was on Monday. No matter who wins the Israeli elections, Yeshua is still Lord and God the Father is still King. So we do not fret. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll start in Baltimore, Maryland. Ravi, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Shalom.
Shalom.
I agree with you mostly, and you and Joseph Prince are my heroes. But I'm afraid after the Prime Minister interfered in the 2012 elections by openly siding with Romney, Mr. Obama may be paying back. But just forgetting the Arab issue for a minute, I think the troubling thing in this saga for me is that we are tending to do a lot of idol worship. I agree with you, the promise in the Bible for Israel is unquestionable. I have no other loyalty, and to be biblical. But we are warned not to idolize any leader, ours or theirs, any state, ours or theirs. And I think watching even evangelical, I'm a little concerned that we tend towards idol worshiping the state of Israel. And there's no perfect state except the one that Jesus will usher in.
Yes.
So that's my caution.
Yeah, Ravi, first, I find it fascinating that you love both Pastor Joseph Prince and me when we've had different emphases, but I believe he's a lover of Israel, and I appreciate the great good that he does for so many. I just have differences at certain points. But that actually, I like to hear that. That's not a negative to me. That's a positive. I tweeted
this. Keep thinking, right?
Yeah, listen, I tweeted this out, 2 days ago. I'm pleased to see Netanyahu's victory, but he's hardly a savior figure. Pray that God would give wisdom for the right government coalition. So I agree on both points. Number one, Prime Minister Netanyahu is a flawed man like everyone else. He's had scandals in Israel. He's been a great statesman, strong leader, rightly admired by many of us, and unflinching in terms of speaking the truth about radical Islam and its threat to Israel. But just a regular person that has made mistakes as well with an imperfect system there. So we don't want to overexalt him. So again, I'm not saying that just to agree. I gladly disagree, but I tweeted that out. And number two, yes, I absolutely, to the core of my being, believe that God has raised up the nation of Israel, that he is the ultimate backer of the nation of Israel. But I am always a critic of the nation because I've always criticized when Christians, or been concerned, I should say, when Christians go over there and fall in love with Israel without coming away with a burden as well, because you've got the vast majority of the nation is secular. It's worldly. You go to Tel Aviv, it's as worldly as any city. They've got their red light districts. They've got their pornography. Tel Aviv was overwhelmingly voted the most gay-friendly city in the world a few years ago. So you've got that environment. Israeli women serving in the military get free abortions. So there's much to be ashamed of. Then the ultra-Orthodox, as devoted as they are often known for hypocrisy. And, of course, they hotly oppose Jewish faith in Jesus. And then Israel has not been guiltless in terms of its dealing with Palestinians. It hasn't been perfect. So, yeah, we can idolize the prime minister and the nation, and it's a mistake. I'm a wholehearted supporter of Israel and absolutely standing with Israel, but not because of Israel's goodness, because of God's purposes. Yes, they do shine in the midst of the Middle East, but it's far from a perfect nation. Ravi, come see me. Everyone listening in Greater Maryland right now, I'm going to be in Silver Spring, Maryland for an Israel conference Friday night, Saturday. It'll continue into Sunday. Silver Spring at Emmanuel's Church. I'll give you more details when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-348-7884. Yeah, another fair point that was made by Ravi was that Prime Minister Netanyahu was accused of interfering in the U.S. election by supporting Mitt Romney. The political TV advertisement featuring Benjamin Netanyahu and the slogan, "The world needs American strength, not apologies," is likely to fuel claims that the Israeli Prime Minister is interfering in the U.S. presidential election in support of Republican candidate Mitt Romney. Of course, Barack Obama was accused of interfering with the re-election campaign of Prime Minister Netanyahu. Are the accusations true on both sides? Yeah, I think so. I think neither one wanted to see the other re-elected, and both ended up getting re-elected. And interestingly, when Prime Minister Netanyahu has been leading, he has, is it always or for the most part, had a leader in America that was not on the same side as he was. So that makes life very, very interesting along the way here. But that was a report I was just reading from TheGuardian.com. 866-34-TRUTH. You are thoroughly Jewish. Thursday calls are more than welcome. Okay, details. I promise details. Today, as soon as the show's over, I fly into Baltimore and then drive down to Silver Spring, Maryland. This conference is being put together by Together for Israel. My dear friend Scott Volk, who was our tour group leader when we were in Israel in May, I'm scheduled to speak, 7 p.m. tomorrow night, and then March 21st in the morning, either 9 or 11. I'm not sure which session they have me slated for. This is going to be at Emmanuel's Church. So if you live anywhere in Silver Spring, you probably know Emmanuel's Church, one of the fine churches in the city there, and it's 16819 New Hampshire Avenue. So everyone listening to me right now on WAVA FM, AM, everyone in the greater Maryland, D.C., Virginia area, please come. It's going to be a great conference. John Burness, head of Jewish Voice, will be speaking. Scott Volk will be speaking. Worship led by Marty Goetz, who's one of my absolute favorite worship leaders anywhere in the world. So please come. If you are a regular listener, make sure if I'm at the book table or I'm able to greet you that you come and shake my hand so I can meet more of our great listeners. If you need info, just go to the website, askdrbrown.org, and where it says contact, just hover over that. You'll see the itinerary button. Back to the phones. We go to Brooklyn, New York. Linda, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Okay, I'm very nervous.
It's just the two of us talking. Don't be nervous. Just having a friendly phone conversation.
I am, and as a matter of fact, I've become very teary. I watch the news, and especially really for the analysis, I pay attention to what's happening. I have an interest in the Middle East. But I recently, I feel that God answered my prayer when I prayed for the re-election of Bibi. I know that Israel, God said in prophecy many years ago that the nation will be born in a day. And we saw that May 14, 1948. They're in the land to stay. They're not coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that's where Christ, Jesus Christ, is going to return.
Mm-hmm.
So we see what's happening, but we also see the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. God said that a nation will be born in the day. That happened. I have an interest in end time prophecy, but now, so I pay attention. Now, this is something else that I read that B.B. had said in a paper. Well, I think may have been the Jewish Post. I shouldn't quote that, but he did say that his hopes are or is that the language, that Hebrew would be the language of a Jewish state. So that's what I'm waiting for. So these are, I'm not judging anyone, whatever that goes on there. The point of it is,
yeah, just a quick question, Linda. I don't think I follow the quote, though, because Hebrew is the national language of the Jewish state.
Well, in the article that I read, I don't want to quote the paper, but he faced opposition at whatever time it was that the language was Arabic, and he said that the nation's language should be Hebrew. I'm not saying that it isn't, but that's what
Got it. Hey, Linda, first, I appreciate your prayerful concern and your love for Israel, and I believe God's put that in your heart, put that in the heart of many fine Christians to pray for Israel. I believe the prayers of Christians make a great difference in terms of the protection of Israel and God's purposes for Israel. We cooperate with God through prayer, and our prayers do make a difference. I'll have to see that exact quote and see if we can locate it. But in point of fact, Hebrew is the official national language. You do have ultra-Orthodox Jews, and their first language is Yiddish. And part of the reason is that they do not support the modern state of Israel. They believe that the modern state of Israel gets in the way of the coming of the Messiah because the Messiah has to regather the Jews and establish the state, so that this is trying to take prophecy into human hands, and that they also feel it feeds into worldwide anti-Semitism, and they could say, look at all the hatred of the Jews because of the state of Israel. And then, of course, you have the Arab Israelis who live in Israel. They would speak Arabic and Hebrew, but of course they speak Hebrew to function in the country. The Palestinian population living in Gaza, living in West Bank, would obviously have Arabic as their first language. So perhaps it was in that reference, but I'll have to get the exact quote. But of course, Hebrew is the national language of the Jewish state. But Linda, thank you for calling. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, I'm going to be taking calls for 90 minutes, answering questions and giving you more info about all of this. So the elections, where we're going, relationship between America and Israel. But I want to remind you once again, God himself sits on the throne. He who scattered Israel has regathered Israel. Yes, there's a remnant. There's a remnant within the nation, the Israel within Israel, that believes. And that should be our ultimate place of support and solidarity, standing with Jewish believers in the land and then other believers in the land and then reaching out to all. But we stand with Israel as a whole because God has brought the Jewish people back to the land. And in standing with them, we also call for justice and righteousness for the good of all people in the land. Make sure you check out today's special resource offer. 5 of the most important, impacting, life-changing books I've ever written, put together in one package. And we've taken the price, cut it in half, and we're paying the postage. So go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, for more info.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just saw a comment on Facebook to one of our regular listeners, I assume. I was just looking over there at a moment, and there's, at any given moment, hundreds of new comments, but I just happened to spot one because I referenced listening to Rush Limbaugh that someone is now going to question everything I have to say about marriage. I listen to lots of different people. I read lots of different people. I get input from all kinds of different angles, and Rush Limbaugh is not my model for marriage and family. Well, I appreciate many of his insights and differ with others, and I could say that about quite a few others that I appreciate and that I don't appreciate. Anyway, I happen to spot the comment. It got my attention. I'm sorry I ignored all the others, but that's the one I happen to spot. 866-34-TRUTH on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Okay, what is the biggest concern that I would have going forward with this particular government? Was I personally glad to see Likud get such a resounding victory? Absolutely. Was I cheering on Prime Minister Netanyahu when he spoke to Congress? Absolutely. Was I grieved over the way the president has treated him and the way certain congressional Democrats dissed him? Yes. But I'm also grieved for them. I believe it's in their worst interest to make these choices as well. At the same time, I don't want anyone to think it's all just rosy and wonderful because Likud has a victory. In order to form the government that they want to form and have a ruling majority, so at least 61 seats in the Knesset, and for some this is repetitious, but others still don't understand the Israeli system, they have to work with other parties. So the other parties now, maybe you only have 7 seats. Likud has 40. So Likud is more than 4 times as big and powerful. But when it comes to getting the coalition, if you are the one that could say, well, I won't work with you, I'll work with the other government because I've just got one focus. And whoever's in power, that's my focus. And I'm going after this one particular thing. Well, then these players now have lots of power. So the ultra-Orthodox have very, very specific goals, which often are not in the best interest of the nation as a whole and often are very hostile to Jewish believers and others who dissent with their traditional view. So to have a strong right-wing government in terms of security is also going to mean strong right-wing religious, which in many ways is not in the best interest of the nation as a whole and certainly not in the best interest of Messianic Jews. They'll say, you want me? I want this position so I can control this and this. Each party will do that. Some of them, it will not be in the best interest of the nation. All right, let's go back to the phones. Rick in Richmond Hill, New York, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, I have a question figure out what the, for lack of another word, enemy or factions are after. Are they after the Jewish people who happen to live in Israel, or are they after the land of Israel itself? Or are they after all Jews worldwide, be they Chinese or Polynesian, who happen to practice the faith of Judaism? So is it any one of the three targets or all three?
It depends on which... Go ahead.
Hypothetically speaking, I somehow transport all the Jewish people who are in Israel right now to another place like Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and then... Israel has zero Jews residing in the land of Israel. Are the factions that are after whatever's going on, are they going to change their focus to the Jews in Oklahoma, or are they going to invade Israel and be satisfied and live forever in peace?
Rick, that is a tremendous question, and it's a very, very important question. I'm going to answer it on the other side of the break, but there are groups that fit into all three categories. Some only Jewish people in the land, some the focus the land itself, others Jews worldwide. I'll explain.
It's fire we want, for fire we please. Stand in the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, blessed, delighted to be with you on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Right before the break, Rick in Richmond Hill, New York, called in. Rick, this is a tremendously important question, and I believe one of the more important questions that we're going to address on this broadcast. So for those that missed it, the question is, are there groups, terrorist groups, radical Islamic groups, different groups, who have an issue with Jews living in the land of Israel? Or do they have an issue, their issue is just the land of Israel itself? Or is their issue Jews worldwide? Let me go in reverse order. There is a famous Islamic tradition, an authoritative Islamic tradition, that says that the day of resurrection will not come, the final end, the climactic end, until the Muslims fight against the Jews. The final vision of Islam is that Christians will be subjugated. If they're not converted, Christians will be subjugated and Jews will be destroyed, to the point that the famous tradition says that the trees will say, there's a Jew standing behind me, kill him, O Muslim. So that's the first thing. There are some who are hostile to Jews worldwide. For example, the bombing of the synagogue in Argentina years ago. Iran allegedly has blood on its hands for that act. If you think of the demonic forces wanting to destroy the Jewish people in Europe, this is before there was a modern state of Israel. And Nazi anti-Semitism was completely unrelated to the modern state of Israel potentially being restored or Jews living in the land. So there is a demonic worldwide Jewish hatred that continues, and Israel becomes kind of the central point of it. Israel becomes the focal point, but you will see, for example, when Israel's at war with Hamas in Gaza, worldwide protests against Jews everywhere. Protests in Berlin, protests in America saying, kill the Jews or we need bigger ovens. So let's just say that anti-Zionism is often just the excuse for anti-Semitism. This is the expression, we're just upset with what Israel's doing in the land. But ultimately and actually, the bigger issue is that there is tremendous hatred towards Jews worldwide. That being said, Jewish people living in the land of Israel exacerbates the problem. Islam is about submission, bringing the whole world into submission to Allah, the God of Islam. And subjugation is part of that. When, let's say the gospel spread through a certain country, we do not have the equivalent of Sharia law so that we now bring the entire country into that legal system. Islam does. Muhammad was not just a spiritual leader, he was a political leader and a military leader. So as Islam spreads, it spreads militarily, it spreads politically as well. So now an entire nation is brought under Islamic power. What happens if that nation frees itself? Well, that's what happened, say, with Spain after the Moorish conquest and Spain coming under Islamic rule and then freeing itself. Now this is an ongoing reproach. It's like someone has the woman that you used to be married to. She no longer belongs to you. She belongs now to another man. That's how Islam would look at that. Palestine, that for much of its history was under Islamic control or part of the Ottoman Empire, whatever the situation was, Jerusalem being under Islamic control, now not only being under, not being under control, but being under Jewish control, that is the absolute ultimate insult. The Jews who are the sons of apes and pigs, according to Islamic tradition, the Jews who are the ultimate blood-sucking evil people, literally blood-sucking evil people, for them to control it is the ultimate reproach. So Hamas has said repeatedly, our issue is not with Jews worldwide. Our issue is with the occupation. And if we deal with the occupation, then we'll be happy. I have no question that radical Islamic anti-Semitism is fueled greatly by the Jewish presence in the land and by the modern state of Israel and the alleged illegal occupation. And if that did not exist, some of that would be quieted. and some of those who are hostile to Israel now say we wouldn't be if Jews were not there. I would simply say there's still a broader satanic plot to destroy the Jewish people, a broader anti-Semitism, and that we can't deny or get away from.
Okay. Dr. Brown, you answered my suspicion that the agenda is not Jewish Semites who occupy Israel. When I say occupy, I'm saying it neutrally. The Jewish people who live for generations in Israel or have regained a foothold in Israel, it's not so much that it's Jews in Israel, it's Jews, period. And I think the target is not just the land and the people who are Semites in Israel, but a worldwide campaign to rid the planet of the Jewish presence. And I just thought I was being paranoid or ultra something to imagine that thought.
No. Look. The fact is, you just have to look at history. You have to look at all of the attempts to wipe out the Jewish people. You have to say, what was the connection between Stalin's anti-Semitism and the modern state of Israel? Really nothing. What was the connection between Nazi anti-Semitism before there was a modern state of Israel? Obviously none. And why is it that just Jewish presence in the land was something viewed with hostility by radical Muslims in the 20s and the 30s, and they gave birth to others? And you could just look at the demonizing of the Jewish people worldwide. Why are Jews in Europe being attacked when some of them live in Europe? I mean, they live in Europe, not in Israel. Why are they being attacked? Why are American Jews who are secular being hated as if they were guilty of doing something in the Middle East? So, yeah, it is true that there is an absolute focus on Jewish presence in the land and the state of Israel, but there is a larger anti-Semitism at work at the same time. We have to be careful. We always have to be careful to not say someone is anti-Semitic because they oppose the modern state of Israel. However, it is often anti-Semitism that is being cloaked and masked with anti-Zionism. Important question and a great discussion. Thank you. 866-34-TRUTH, Arlington, Virginia. Nancy, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello?
Go ahead, Nancy. Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. I just wanted to ask, because we're talking about Israel and everything that's going on now with Netanyahu and the relationship that Israel has had with America. And I remember the place in the Bible, I think it was in Daniel, that spoke about the abomination of desolation and all of that, and the fact that we needed to look out for some stuff happening to let us know when the coming of Christ would, you know, all of the signs he talked about there.
Yes.
And I was thinking, isn't this what is going on right now, where the ally of Israel is beginning to turn its back on Israel and ally with the enemies of Israel? Isn't this what the Bible spoke about? Is this not it? Or is there something else we should be looking out for?
All right. Let me give you a yes and no answer. Let me explain. If you went back to World War II and the birth of the modern state of Israel, you could have looked at a number of things, and you know, Hitler was looked at as an antichrist kind of figure, or the false prophet figure, and Mussolini, the revived Roman Empire, and maybe he was an antichrist figure, and now the plot to exterminate the Jews and two-thirds of European Jews wiped out in the Holocaust, and now the birth of the modern state of Israel. Those were tremendously important moments in history with catastrophic suffering for the Jewish people and for other nations of the world as well. But that is now over 70 years ago, or going on 70 years ago, and the end has still not come. So we need to be careful. And I look at the broad strokes, Nancy. I first see, for example, Matthew 24, pointing back to Daniel 9 and another passage in Daniel about the abomination of desolation, that Jesus first was speaking to his own disciples living at that time about the coming destruction of Jerusalem. But then there is a later final assault that is spoken of by Scripture as well, that I believe Jesus also alludes to. In other words, there are two layers in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. What happened in the generation of Jesus' day and what will happen in the final generation. I don't believe we've gotten to those final signs yet, but the broad strokes I see, the regathering of the Jewish people to the land, the old city of Jerusalem coming back under Jewish control, the massive harvest of Gentile believers worldwide at unprecedented rates, and little by little, the turning of Jewish people to the Messiah in the land, and increasing world hostility against Jerusalem and the Jewish people. I see the broad strokes. I see the broad outline. I don't see the specific details filled in yet. So I'm not going to make pronouncements based on that. But thank you for the call. Hey, remember, I'll be in Silver Spring, Maryland this weekend, Friday night, Saturday, and then Sunday meetings as well, a special Israel conference, Silver Spring, Maryland. I hope to see you there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I really appreciate your Thoroughly Jewish Thursday calls. This is Michael Brown. I'm delighted to be with you live. There was a satellite glitch yesterday. Some new equipment was apparently installed, and there was a glitch. So many of you heard a repeat broadcast. It was a great broadcast from a few years ago. But we're doing the broadcast live, and I'm wondering why the callers are calling about subject matter completely unrelated to what I was talking about. We did get that sorted out, and of course, we are live again today. And if you're anywhere in the greater Maryland area, Maryland, D.C., Virginia, please come and see me in Silver Spring, Maryland. I'm scheduled to speak Friday night and Saturday morning, 866-34-TRUTH, Plainfield, New Jersey. Reverend Christian, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, for taking my call. Dr. Brown, in terms of diaspora, I don't know if you have heard about the Jewish settlers in Nigeria. I understand that there are some people in Nigeria, they are called Igbos. I don't know if you have heard about them. And, you know, I just wanted to know if you know anything about them and if you could please expatiate on that a little bit for me.
Yes, there are around the world in different nations, different groups that claim Jewish descent. Now, we first have to remember this is not a popular thing to do in most countries. Many times people are persecuted because of it. So you would wonder why someone would make this claim. There are Jews in Ethiopia, of course, that Israel has helped get out. There are Jews in China, Jews in India, Jews in other parts of Africa. So the question is, are they Israelites, are they original Israelites? Are they members of the 10 tribes that were largely exiled and scattered, or part of the kingdom of Judah that was exiled and scattered, and then through intermarriage over a period of time would then take on the characteristics of the various people groups so that you'd have Jews that look Chinese and Jews that look Indian and Jews that look African, regardless of their origins. Within Nigeria, just as I'm looking at this, it's spelled I-G-B-O, so Igbo Jews. They're part of the Igbo people of Nigeria. And according to an article I just pulled up on Wikipedia, their religious practices include circumcision 8 days after the birth of a male child, observance of kosher dietary laws, separation of men and women during menstruation, wearing of the talith, that's the prayer shawl and kippah, the yarmulke, and celebration of holidays such as Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement, and Rosh Hashanah, which is the Jewish New Year. In recent times, they've also adopted holidays such as Hanukkah and Purim. Here's what's fascinating. If, in fact, they have all of these practices, they don't all go back to ancient Israel. In other words, in ancient Israel, the men did not wear yarmulke or head covering or a talit, a prayer shawl. They did have fringes on the corners of their garments. Rosh Hashanah was not considered the new year, but the Feast of Trumpets. Hanukkah, that would be a later holiday from the middle of the 2nd century B.C. So some of these groups, for example, Ethiopian Jews, didn't know about later rabbinic traditions. Well, that created problems for the rabbinic community because the rabbinic community claimed that some of these traditions went all the way back to Moses And here's a group saying, no, we're ancient. We never heard of some of these. Others said, no, 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 they were converts to Judaism at a certain point in time and are not original Jews. And there remains a lot of discussion and debate about this. Are these original Israelites? Do they reflect practices before the days of rabbinic tradition? Should they be fully recognized as Jews by the Jewish community? And basically, the posture has been from Israel that they should be recognized as Jews and allowed to return to the land. If they believe in Jesus, as a whole group of Ethiopian Jews do, then the Israeli government has been less inclined to work with them, especially with the influence of the very Orthodox. Ultra-Orthodox Jews have not wanted to recognize them because they believe in Jesus. The groups that don't believe in Jesus, they've been welcomed back as Jews, as practicing Jews in the midst of the community, but forced to undergo certain rabbinic teachings so they could be official converts to Judaism. That's created controversy. Ultimately, DNA testing is going to be necessary, and with that, we can get a better idea of things. But it is fascinating, and you have more and more such people, sir, who are rising up in different nations saying, look, we've had these practices for generations. Where did they come from? We are some of the lost tribes of Israel. And it's a fascinating thing to follow. Do you have my book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices?
I'm afraid not.
All right. Well, fear not. I want to send it to you, sir, as a gift. I don't deal with this question a lot, but I do have a few answers in the book where I deal with this and reference some other related points as well. So stay right there. Betsy's going to get your contact info. All right. I want to send that as a gift. For others, the book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices. Be sure to read my latest article, Can Israel Survive? It's on the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And when you're on the website, check out this week's special resource offer. My book, House of Dari, will rock your world, as it rocked mine writing it in 1990. My book, End of the American Gospel Enterprise, the first book I wrote on revival and America's need for revival. That'll stir you to this day. Time for Holy Fire came out 3 months before the Brownsville Revival began. The closing question of that book, are you ready? I knew something was at the door. Go and Sin No More, my number one book on living out grace-based holiness, grace-empowered holiness. And then the Revival Answer book, how to discern whether something is really of God or of not. We've cut the price in half on the 5 books and we're paying the postage. So call or order as many copies as you want. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or just go to the website, askdrbrown.org. You can find out more info there. I'm going to get to some more calls now. If I don't get your call, stay right there. And we're going to continue this in the next hour. I know some of you have been holding for a while. I want to get to you. And if we don't get you in the next few minutes, it will be in the next few minutes of the next hour. Let's go to Hebron, Indiana. Brad, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yeah, hi, doctor. My last name happens to be Brown, too. So
yeah.
I don't know if we have any relation other than if any of your heritage came from Scotland or not. But
No, mine came from Russia. But the name was cut short when my grandparents came to the States and arrived at Ellis Island. And we've been unable to trace back. We tried with different family members. We've been unable to trace back what the original name was. But to your question, sir.
Yes, sir. There's a couple of Christian, I don't know what you consider them, apologists, theologians or such, but I'm speaking specifically of Mark Bill and Rabbi Cohen, and they're talking about such things as the fall feast in relationship to the return of Christ, as the spring feast related to the Lord coming in his first coming.
All right, tell you what, I'm going to continue this discussion. Some are like, no, the hour's ending. Okay, no question that the spring feasts prophetically describe the first coming of the Messiah, his death and resurrection, sending of the Spirit. No question the fall feasts speak to his return. No question about that. My bottom line today, Israel will not stand by its own military power. Israel will not stand because of America's support. Israel will stand because God has ordained it. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. What a day to focus on the elections in Israel, the tenuous relationship between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu, and what's coming next.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Just had a great hour with some great calls and interaction with our wonderful listening audience. So much to talk about. No place I'd rather be right now than speaking with you on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Do we have cause for concern about the relationship between America and Israel right now? Yes and no. Yes, in terms of serious cause for concern, with the high level of tension between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu. No, in terms of the fact that on a larger level, Congress is standing with Prime Minister Netanyahu and the newly elected government, which has yet to form a coalition officially, but is obviously working hard on that even as we speak. Should we have concern? Again, yes and no. Yes, because Israel could be hurt by wrong decisions America makes. Israel has suffered in the past. Israel will suffer in the future. Therefore, Israel could be hurt by wrong decisions that America makes. And America could be hurt by making wrong decisions towards Israel. There's nowhere in Scripture that God guarantees a perfect, blessed future for America or even a future for America. So, yeah, America could be hurt by that as well. Absolutely. On the other hand, God is greater, and God is working out his purposes, and his purposes will come to pass even where there is human failure. So there are consequences, but for example, Jesus will return. Just as surely as he came and died and rose, he will return. That is a given. That is definite. That is sure. That will happen more surely than I'm sitting here right now. As surely as he came, he will come again. Human interference, human cooperation was not going to make the one happen or not make it happen, or make the other happen or not make it happen. But the timing could be affected by human cooperation or human interference. There are things that God is doing that get slowed, that get hastened based on human participation. I see it in many ways the same when it comes to our relationship to Israel. 866-34-TRUTH, any Jewish-related question that you have, this is a great day to call in. Hebrew-related, modern state of Israel, radical Islam, American Israel, great day to call, 866-348-7884. Right before we started this hour, I was talking to Brad in Hebron, Indiana. And Brad, you were asking about prophecy teaching by people like Mark Bills and others who talk about the end times. Let's say this, some of these teachers will get into more detail than I do and feel that the scriptures point to things more specifically than I might. And it may just be because they have more insight or they studied it more carefully. And here and there, there'd be differences of opinion in terms of exactly how things unfold. But the large strokes, we all see pretty clearly. What I mean by that is, as Messianic Jewish leaders and Christians with a heart for Israel, we often see these broad strokes clearly. So we start with the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Paul references that in 1 Corinthians 5. Messiah, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed for us, and let's celebrate the feast. And you know, and then he gives a spiritual metaphor for that. Jesus was called the Lamb of God when John the Immerser saw him. Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world, in John 1:29. His resurrection corresponds to first fruits, which happens within Passover, the first Sunday, day after the Sabbath within Passover. Paul references that in 1 Corinthians 15, that the Messiah has risen and become the first fruits of them who slept. And then the next is Shavuot, Pentecost, the outpouring of the Spirit, which traditional Judaism says was the time God gave the law on Mount Sinai. What comes next after a several-month break? The sounding of the trumpets, Feast of Trumpets. Jesus returns, Matthew 24, 1 Corinthians 15, 1 Thessalonians 4, Revelation 11. He comes, establishes his kingdom with the sound of the trumpet. Purification for Israel leading to Day of Atonement, and then the harvest of the nations, tabernacles. You see it in Zechariah 12, 13, 14. Absolutely clear to me.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast here on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. I want to get your calls in a moment, 866-34-TRUTH. But let's go to clip number two. This is John King, host of Inside Politics, speaking with Julie Pacer, discussing the state of Israel's relationship to the U.S. in the wake of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's re-election. Clip number two.
Now that Prime Minister Netanyahu, it appears, will form the new government, he clearly, his party came out ahead in the election. The president doesn't like that. They were mad he came, spoke to Congress about the Iran deal. They were mad on the eve of the election he flip-flopped on whether or not he would support a two-state solution, a Palestinian state. On the morning of the election, to drive out turnout, Prime Minister Netanyahu suggesting, essentially going on, these are my words, not his exactly, but paraphrasing, that his base needed to get out and vote because Arabs were going to get out and vote and shape Israel.
Yeah, I mean, if you thought the relationship between Obama and Netanyahu couldn't get any worse, it now has. And the issue that has really gotten to the White House is this flip-flop on Palestinian statehood, because that has been something Netanyahu has backed previously. It's something that Republican and Democratic U.S. presidents have made a central tenet of their Middle East peace plans. And what White House officials are saying is that Netanyahu has now made this his policy of record, and there will be ramifications for doing that. One of the things that we started hearing yesterday is these hints that the U.S. may ease up on their opposition to the Palestinians going to the United Nations. The U.S. has vowed to use its veto power at the Security Council, vowed to block any efforts there. But now they're saying, you know, it is possible that we could ease up and let them try to get statehood that way, which would be a huge shift.
Yeah, that would be a massively huge shift. And look, let's be candid. As much as I'm glad to see Prime Minister Netanyahu reelected, as much as I was grieved to see the way the president treated him and shunned him in his visit to Congress, and as glad as I was to see the power of Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech and the importance of warning the world about Iran, this is a very difficult situation to sort through. I believe it would be absolutely tragic and horrific if America decided that it was going to allow a push for Palestinian statehood to come through the UN and not through negotiations between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And what's going to happen? Israel is basically going to refuse. This is what I imagine under Netanyahu government, unless there was so much world pressure that the government collapsed and then a new government came in and said, hey, we'll just work with you. But then the results of that could be dreadful for Israel. And I believe long term, very negative for America as well, because we'd be putting them under pressure to do the wrong thing. But here's why I say it's such a complex issue. And this is what's really important to understand. Has Prime Minister Netanyahu changed his tune? Has he said in the past he would support a two-state solution, but no longer does? Yes. Did he do that simply to be reelected? God knows. But there are reasons for him saying this. In other words, the more you look at it, the more you realize this can't work because of the hostility of the Palestinian leadership towards Israel. Obviously, Hamas in Gaza, they're not willing to work with Israel, recognize and affirm Israel's right to exist and have the land there and have Jerusalem as its capital. Absolutely not. The Palestinian demands have never changed, but it seems that whenever demands are met, whenever there are agreements made, the Palestinians say, not enough, or it's got to go further. And now if there's an insistence on 1967 borders, I mean, you basically make security impossible. And you put Israel in a completely untenable situation. And there are others, as I mentioned briefly the last hour, who are saying one-state solution. We all live together, just like you've got the Arabs now living in the land, 1.5 million strong, more than that. What about 20%, 25% of the national population and representing 14 out of the 120 Knesset seats? So over 10% of the parliament, Arab parties represented there. We just incorporate the rest of the Palestinians. Forget Hamas and Gaza, make that its own state and whatever. If they're going to live as enemies, they live as enemies. And then just incorporate Judea, Samaria, the so-called West Bank, incorporate that, all part of Israel. You say, but then it's not going to work because the Palestinians will outnumber the Israelis. Well, as I said, no, demographically, the Jewish settlers are growing rapidly enough, and that's not going to be a problem. And, of course, the Orthodox Jewish population is growing rapidly. So as long as we have a Jewish majority, we'll all live together in peace. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard, but it's going to be a lot harder the other way. It's going to be a lot more difficult the other way because the two-state solution is not going to work and Israel's not going to have defensible borders. So the situation remains complex. You say, okay, Mike, you're a student of this. What's your answer? I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. Oh, the one-state solution seems great. The foreigners living together with Israel, with a Jewish majority and a Jewish state, but is it viable? Is it possible? And you're going to have the one national anthem? The Palestinians are going to sing HaTikva, the hope, in Hebrew? Obviously not. But if you want to read more on this, Carolyn Glick's book, The One-State Solution, is a fascinating read. I haven't finished going through all of it, but she's quite aware of the obstacles and issues. In her mind, two-state solution is not going to work. We've always known it's not going to work, and it's rubbish to keep focusing on it. Let's talk about something that will work. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Johnston, Rhode Island. Paul, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello there, Doctor. I have a question in regards to how this election, re-election of Netanyahu, will affect or not affect the Syrian situation as far as their nuclear program.
Syria's nuclear, you're not talking about Iran's nuclear program.
Iran, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yes, all right. Very, very important. There are a few things. If a more left-wing pacifist government was elected, they would not be taking the same hard line that Netanyahu did before Congress, warning the world about Iran. And by the way, Iranian leadership, I mean, they completely mock Netanyahu and just refer to him as a buffoon. So the hostility there is very, very deep and very, very real. But if you had a more left-wing pacifist government, they would probably emphasize more negotiations and trying to control things in that way. They would be less inclined to try to bomb Iran. And from what I could tell, again, this is just surmising, but reading everything I can read and understand about it, that if Israel under Netanyahu was convinced that Iran was going to get nuclear power, that they would do their best to bomb and take out the facilities. I'm sure they've done their best to do it in other ways. It doesn't surprise me if they've been involved in taking out some of the nuclear scientists, that they've been behind their assassinations. It wouldn't surprise me that Israel led the way with a massive attack on the software, and it was so brilliantly conceived. Some said it had to be U.S. and Israeli intelligence working together, so it was causing the machinery to destroy itself without any human hands involved. But I believe that if Iran was really on the verge of getting nuclear arms, that Israel would try to take the reactors out and would risk an all-out war with Iran. I think that's a very real possibility. And now with Netanyahu's re-empowerment, that remains on the table. If they feel that America continues to go on a ridiculous mission, recently, just this week, it was announced that U.S. national intelligence, which is almost an oxymoron, it seems, in this regard, has removed Iran and Hezbollah, so Hezbollah radical Islamists in Lebanon, supported and funded by Iran, and they have in common chanting death to Israel, death to America. They've removed them from the terrorist threat list. Paul, it seems crazy. It seems absolutely crazy for us to be doing what we're doing and to not realize the genuine terrorist threat that Iran is. All right. Okay. Well, yep. Thanks. Appreciate it. Appreciate the question. And certainly it affects things greatly. The relationship with Iran greatly, greatly affected. All right, Clifford, you're next. Stay right there. We've got a break coming up. But first, before we get to that, let me just grab some of these other headlines here. Here's the challenge with the two-state solution. Day and night, Palestinians through state media and in the schools are fed anti-Israel propaganda. I'm not saying Israel is perfect in its relationship with Palestinians. I'm saying that they're fed anti-Israel propaganda day and night. February 14th, so just a month ago, on the Egyptian Dream 2 TV channel, Palestinian historian Salman Abu Sita said that Israel, quote, had set up detention camps and forced labor camps for the Palestinians in 1948. They did it the same way it was done against the Jews in Auschwitz. These are charges being raised by a so-called Palestinian historian. In fact, we'll come back, start the next segment, and I want you to hear something. It'll be some boys rapping at a Hamas rally. Tell you about that when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
اسمع كل العاد راح نداوي جرحان ونحرر الأسران وإحنا في الأنفاق نأسر جنود نكتل يهود هذه قصة غزة زمن الحروب زمن الحروب الدول العربية قالوا عنها إرهابية غزة قطر.
Those are boys rapping during a Hamas rally held in Gaza. This is March 6th. Two boys rapping about fighting the occupation. Through the tunnels, we will capture soldiers and fight Jews. The rally was broadcast on Al-Aqsa TV. Memory TV reports, boys, this is our story. Our story is a Gazan one. It begins with steel. We bombarded Jerusalem, Haifa, and Tel Aviv. Listen, you occupation, you occupying army, our Gaza's mighty will fend off the Zionist aggression. We bombarded Ashkelon, and they hid in their shelters like mice. We have martyrs, we have wounded, and we are blanked off, but despite it all, we have remained steadfast. They killed children, destroyed homes, and displaced families. Listen, you occupation, we have sacrificed martyrs, but despite it all, we will heal our wounded, we will free our prisoners, and through the tunnels, we will capture soldiers and fight Jews. This is the story of Gaza. It is the age of wars. The Arab countries said that we are terrorists, Gaza, Qatar, and the West Bank. The Egyptian court said that we are terrorists, but we are Gazans, and we built the homeland with hands of stone and steel, the hands of the Al-Qassam Brigade, so the military wing of Hamas. this is what kids grow up with, and they live in poverty. They live in hardship, the primary reason being that Hamas does not take the money it receives to help build up the lives of its people. Rather, it instills terror in their hearts and uses it to build terror tunnels and rockets to attack Israel. And remember, Israel gave Gaza over after people had been settling there for years and there were thousands of Israelis living there and thriving in peaceful relationships, developing greenhouses and bringing prosperity. Israel said, okay, under Ariel Sharon, the land goes back to you, to the Palestinians. And what do? They elect Hamas as their government. And Hamas is absolutely dead set on Israel's existence. It cannot allow the Jewish existence in the land. It cannot allow a Jewish state in the land. And Jerusalem is a capital. It cannot allow it based on its radical Islamic ideology. That's who they are. And that's who the people elected. And there's all-out war at times between Hamas and Palestinian Authority and brutality and atrocities. I'm talking about torture. I'm talking about murder. I'm talking about all types of atrocities committed both ways and no love lost between the two groups. If they do join together, as they have temporarily for a so-called unity government, it's only because of their common hatred for Israel. That's what's going to unite them together. And Israel's saying, how's this going to work? The more we give back, the more hostility there is towards us. That's how many Israelis will look at this. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Warwick, Rhode Island. Clifford, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks for calling.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing very well, thank you.
All right. You got to give me 2 seconds to get this out. Jacob, surnamed Israel, had 12 sons. Each one of his sons went on to become a nation on the exact prophesied day. And those sons are the English, the Irish, the Scottish, the Germans, the Dutch, the French. Now, he said, God said, of this Jerusalem, talking about the place where the Jews occupy right now, I will make an abomination and a desolation. I will give thee a new Jerusalem with the fir tree, the box tree, the rivers that divide the nation, the oceans on all sides. He was describing America. Sir, the Jews are not Israelites, nor have they ever been Israelites. They're Canaanites, Edomites, Sodomites, Jebusites, Pezerites, Hivites, Hittites, Moabites, Girgashites, Amalekites, Amorites, but they're not Israelites. And you know this, Dr. Brown. You know the Jews do not belong there, and they are, if you read John 8:44, are children of the devil. They are not even of God. They're not his sheep.
All right, so, Clifford, hang on. All right, Clifford, I want to give you a chance to enlighten us more and to tell us how all Jews are not Israelites, are actually Sodomites and Girgashites and Jebusites and all children of the devil, and how Britain and other countries are actually, that's the lost tribes of Israel, and how America is actually the New Jerusalem. Because you're enlightening everyone with all kinds of information that most human beings are not privy to. So you're going to help us a little bit more. Clifford, you said that each tribe on the prophesied day became a nation. Just give me the text for that. Let's start there. Just give me the text for that. Give me the biblical text that said they would each become a nation on a specific day. Just the biblical text for that.
Prophesied day. Yes, sir. And I'm going to tell you a little more.
No. Ask me that question first. What's the problem? Show me in the Bible.
Clifford, show.
All right. That is the most ridiculous, full of bunk call I have heard in a while. And I've heard some pretty crazy, out there, wild calls. Yes, I was being completely, totally sarcastic. It's in my New York Jewish blood to do that sometimes. With one of the most ridiculous calls I've ever gotten in the history of the broadcast. Pure, unbiblical, non-historic bunk without an ounce of scripture to support any of it. Not only can we trace our history through the centuries back to Israel, our DNA also traces us back there. Clifford, I really pray and hope that you'll come to know the truth and that you'll humble yourself to listen. And when you get on the air and say that I know all this bunk that you're spouting, no, quite the contrary. I know it to be bunk, but it could be dangerous because it's the kind of stuff that fuels the fires of anti-Semites. You'll often see Jew haters also denying that the people that they hate are actually Jews. So I'm so sorry to say it, but you illustrate the nature of great deception that does exist. Careful, careful, careful. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, I want to get to your calls on the other side of the break. Our friend, Pastor Chooks, you are of the Igbo people in Nigeria. Okay, we come back. I want to talk to you, Chris, Adam. You'll be next online as well, so stay right there. 866-348-7884. Number to call on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Let me remind you, keep praying for God's will for the Israeli government. You say, no, Prime Minister Netanyahu has been reelected. His party got a majority of seats, and they are clearly back in power and clearly have all the momentum to establish a government. But they have a certain period of time where they must get all these different groups until they get to that magic number of 61 seats, so they have the majority of the Knesset, then they can govern as they desire. And each group knows it. They know it coming in. Here, look at it like this. If there are there's a code to get into a vault, and you have 19 out of the 20 codes to get in there, but I have the 20th, you can't get in there without my, even though I'm only one, you have 19. You need me right now to get in. And if someone else has 19, I'll make a deal with them because they need my code. That's how it is with these smaller parties. So we need the wisdom of God, Prime Minister Netanyahu does, because there could be all kinds of coalitions made that end up being harmful. Pray for God to have his way. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is exciting. We are inching closer. We are inching closer to our full functioning video studio here. Even now as I speak to you, there's an HD camera that I am looking at. And soon enough, can't give you exact dates. There's been so much going into this because it combines live radio with video. But soon enough, we plan to be putting out cutting-edge video on a regular basis, even a daily basis on YouTube, and then one-hour broadcasts on internet, TV, and other outlets. And the sky is the limit. So the show is only going to get sharper as you're listening on the radio. It'll be better than ever with God's grace and help. And then we'll be putting out video in a seamless way. We cannot wait. So I'm excited to be doing this right now, even as I speak to you, speaking to the camera as well. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Before I go to the phones, I just want to say this. I have no problem with someone having a loony theory. I'm sad for them that they got some bizarre theory, you know, and the British Israelite theory or whatever it is, you know, or the Mormons believing that Native Americans, the original Israelites and whatever, different theories. I mean, it grieves me that people are deceived, but it doesn't bother me that they have a loony theory and they want to call in and talk about it. That's where we've got live talk radio. Go for it. You believe it that strongly? Go for it. Or ask me about it. Hey, I heard this. I heard that. I'm not really sure, etc. But that being said, don't call and tell me that I know these things to be true. That's the big mistake that Clifford made. Aside from having completely loony theories and speaking with such dogmatism and not willing to hear that's dangerous. But to say, Dr. Brown, you know this. Where do people get this from that I I'm suppressing this bizarre theory? Oh yeah, I know it's true. I actually know that. I'm not going to come up with a stupid theory that I know it's true, but I'm just suppressing. Where do people think that? Yeah, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, I got a call last hour. Someone was inquiring about Nigerians who say that they are of Jewish descent and they practice circumcision on the eighth day. They have laws for a woman during her period that would relate to biblical laws. They even wear the head covering, the kippah, the yarmulke, the skull cap. They wear prayer shawls, so they practice Jewish traditions. Where does this come from? And it's spelled IGBO, the Igbo people. There's a dear brother I met in Boston, a Nigerian pastor, Chuks, that I met last year, and he's on the phone now. Sir, I know you're from Nigeria, but you are from that particular tribe. Is that right?
Absolutely, my brother. We are the Igbos of Nigeria, and there is deep-rooted belief among the Igbos that we came from Israel, that we are descendants of Israel, of the Jewish people, and every tradition, every cultural practice is almost the same. Well, I say almost, in many cases, exactly the same with what we read in the Old Scriptures. As a matter of fact, when I was growing up, we thought that the name Jew or Israel only existed in heaven because we were children. We didn't know they were even here on earth, but we were reading the things we were reading in the Old Testament, practices and other things. They were exactly the same thing we were doing growing up until later on we grew up to know, oh, wait a minute, the Israel is still here, and the Jewish people are really here. Then there was this deep-rooted desire in many of us to actually come in contact with them.
Well, and stay right there. I just want to ask how it's been traced back. Was there a migration? Was there intermarriage? Was conversion at any point? We'll be right back. I'll get to some more calls. Stay right here.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, of course, the extremists, the terrorists, they hate democracy. They hate the idea that people should be able to choose their own government. But we mustn't let democracy, freedom, the rule of law, the things that we hold dear and people in Tunisia hold dear, we must not let them be defeated or undermined by these extremists and terrorists.
That was the voice of British Prime Minister David Cameron speaking about the radical Islamic terrorist attack that killed many, including foreigners, a number of foreigners that were in museum in Tunisia. Obviously, they're trying to rebuild their tourism. They're trying to draw people back to the nation. And now this horrific, bloody attack, taking lives, stunning several different nations where, for example, one British woman was killed in this. So stunning other nations as well as the people of Tunisia themselves. This is ongoing. Radical Islam continues to spread and march forward worldwide. And because of that, there must be a recognition of who the enemy is and a recognition of how to deal with that enemy. And notice he does not mention either Islamic terrorism. Leaders in France have done that. Of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu did repeatedly, mentioning Iran and Islamic terror in a speech to Congress. And yet President Obama will not refer to Islamic terrorism, and it seems neither will David Cameron in this context. To me, big, big mistake. All right, so the idea that the nation of England is real Israel, or America is real Israel, that's bunk. But the idea that there are Israelis, or Israelites, I should say, scattered around the world who then intermarried with people in different areas and lived now as lost tribes of Israel in different parts of the world, this could be true. And Pastor Chuks, Nigerian pastor, living and working in Boston now, says that he's part of these people in Nigeria, the Igbo people. You have them in other African nations, people who say we practice circumcision on the eighth day, we worship on the seventh day Sabbath, we've identified as Israelites, or we have these traditions, we don't know where they come from. So people try to figure out, where does it come from? Was it actually the lost tribes being scattered, then intermarried? Or was it conversion of some of these tribes in ancient times to the God of Israel, and they've continued in this way? And then sometimes it's only settled by DNA, and others say, well, look, if there's a conversion centuries ago, then that's who they are. Others say, yeah, but it wasn't a conversion to rabbinic tradition. And then they would say, well, we go back before rabbinic tradition. So it's a fascinating discussion. So Pastor, as far as your own study, have you looked into this to see what we can glean historically or how Jewish investigators look at the Igbo people in Nigeria?
You see, that has been the problem, that there has been no credible evidence one can put their hand on and say, this is a decisive piece of evidence. And because of that, many people say, well, you are black, and the Jewish people are not black. That's one big argument they always use against the Igbos. Now, other than cultural practice and traditional thing, just like you mentioned, circumcision, we still practice it to today, and all those other things. In the ancient times as well, there is something they call Ibuenweze. Ibuenweze meaning that the Igbos don't have a king. If you go back to the history among the Jewish people, at the time there was no king until they started agitating for king. The yeah. same thing happened among the Igbos. They never believed in having a king or having one spokesperson. There would is always a communal effort, just like the kibbutz or the things you see in Israel. The same thing among the Igbos. Until much later, they also started seeing the Yorubas of Nigeria, the Hausas of Nigeria, how they have the emirs and how they have the obas. And so they started thinking, oh, we too can have chiefs and kings, and they started the practice of having typical of what happened during the ancient times among the Jewish people. It's still the same thing today.
Very interesting. Now, many of the tribal people who clearly identify as Jews emigrated to Israel and been accepted in Israel?
Absolutely. In the past, we have learned that when the Igbos went to Israel, they were really accepted. And even during the Nigerian Civil War, that the Israelis really helped them a lot, those refugees and those people who needed. So, but all those were the things we heard. I was a little boy then, so I could not list typically what happened. But we continue to hear how they helped the Igbos who desperately needed help at that time.
Fascinating. You know, we have friends who are working with Ethiopian Jews, but they have not been brought out from Ethiopia. They're very, very poor. They have not been brought out from Ethiopia to Israel because they are believers in Jesus. So they are hated by different communities because of their roots. They're hated by other Ethiopians. Their faith in Jesus means they're not accepted by the rabbinic community in Israel. You have, Lemba people in Zimbabwe. Some of my Messianic Jewish friends are working with these different groups to reach out and try to get them reestablished in the land of Israel. But it's very fascinating. And another friend of mine sent me information, a documentary. I haven't watched it yet, but I downloaded it on my computer to watch. It's about many Africans turning to Jewish roots or recognizing the importance of the law and things like that. And naturally, someone growing up, say, in Africa, in a tribal society and an agriculturally based society, and one that lives closer to the land and animals and we even have sacrifices, often Christians in Africa could relate to the Old Testament better than European and American Christians would. So it would seem to be a logical thing that they'd have more appreciation for the Old Testament narrative, including the history of Israel. But this is all fascinating. So we learn another interesting thing about you as well, dear brother. Thank you for the call and for the information.
Thank you, brother. May the Lord continue to strengthen you and increase our access to your ministry and around the world as you continue to be the voice of the people. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Very much appreciate it. So I was in Boston last year and met this dear brother from Nigeria. He's blind. He is a lawyer. He's active in pastoral ministry. And he travels around the world by himself. You just drop him off at the airport with his luggage. You say he's blind. Yeah, he makes his way through the terminal. He gets on planes. He does all this and has accomplished a whole lot. So it's wonderful to hear from him. It's gracious of him to speak in that way. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Adam in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Brown. It's always an honor for you to take my call.
Well, thank you, sir.
Some time ago, I heard you say that you would like to debate a top leader in the Hebrew Roots Movement, whoever that might turn out to be. But with that said, I recently heard a debate between Chris Roseborough and Jim Staley of Passion for Truth Ministries. It was called the Official Sabbath Debate, and you can still find it on YouTube. In the debate, Jim actually quoted you in his defense that there's no scriptural precedent for changing the Sabbath from the seventh day to the first day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And the debate was hosted by Joseph Farah, the founder of WorldNet Daily. And after watching it, I must say, Jim Staley, he is the most articulate apologist for law-keeping that I've ever heard. In fact, Jim's actually given me some food for thought concerning Sabbath observance for Christians that I want to dig into a little deeper. So my question is, do you still have plans to do such a debate? And if so, have you considered a debate with Jim Staley?
Yeah, I really need to do it, and we'll just take note of that, Matt. We'll take note of Jim Staley. Of course, he is a prominent spokesman. And I had an interaction with Tim Haig, who's a scholarly gentleman. His son Caleb, I did a radio show with Caleb one time, talking about these issues. It ended up being a bit more of a debate than I expected. I thought it was going to be maybe a conversation on these things, and could have been the way I approached it, whatever. But we ended up in a bit more of a debate, but we didn't have really a proper format for it. But I'd be delighted to interact with Jim Staley on that. Of course, Joseph Farah is a friend and colleague. My newest book coming out in September, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, 8 Principles for Long-Term Cultural Change, is coming out with WorldNet Daily. And I write an exclusive Wednesday night article for them. That's my latest article, Can Israel Survive? So, whether we just did something on the radio where he came on and we focused on one particular point and went back and forth on it, or discuss the larger issue and had a formal debate on that, I would love to do it, and we'll reach out to him. If you're in direct contact with him, let him know that I'd be delighted to do it, that I know he's a major voice in that camp, and I think we could do it in a constructive way. So if you're in contact with him, let him know. He can contact our ministry, and we'll reach out to him in the coming weeks as well, and I'd absolutely be delighted to do it. I believe that many times Christians have thrown out God's law in a wrongful way and cut themselves off from their biblical Jewish roots. And I believe others have become obsessed with certain things to take on more than God's command. And hey, make sure you join me at the conference in Silver Spring, Maryland this weekend. All right. It is the Together for Israel conference. I'll be speaking Friday night, Saturday morning. Info on my website, AskDrBrown.org. Just go to contact and look for our itinerary.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That was the voice of Paul Wilbur on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. Let me try to give you context for why Prime Minister Netanyahu said that there will not be a two-state solution. Yes, he previously spoke about a two-state solution. That's been the only thing that our governments have spoken about for years now. President Clinton spoke about it. President Bush spoke about it. President Obama has spoken about it. And prime ministers of Israel have all worked towards that for some time now. Prime Minister Netanyahu, right before the election, said it's not going to happen. Now, obviously, he timed it to say, come out and vote for me. Come out and support me. This is the government that you need for your security. And I quoted earlier in the broadcast one journalist who said that the Israelis made clear in their vote that life is more important than the quality of life. In other words, living, surviving is more important than improving the economy and the quality of life. And they realized that their best hope for survival and security was Prime Minister Netanyahu. Yes, they want to address the economy. Yes, they want to fix these problems. Yes, they know that Israelis are under pressure every day, but at least they're alive and not being blown up day and night. And they know that Prime Minister Netanyahu is their best hope to thwart Iran from getting nuclear weapons. But let me explain why this whole idea of two-state solution is so difficult. This is a report, PalWatch.org, Itamar Marcus, from just a few days ago, March 15th. And we're not talking about Hamas. We're not talking about Gaza. We're talking about Palestinian Authority. Last week, the Palestinian Authority, so this is the alleged moderates. This is who Israel would be making the two-state negotiations with. And this would be now a fully empowered Palestinian state in Judea, Samaria, what is called the West Bank. And Palestinian leaders have made it clear they want it to be Judenrein. That's the old German word, Jew-free. No Jews, no Jewish settlers, no Jews there at all. So last week, the Palestinian Authority celebrated the anniversary of the Coastal Road Massacre, in which Palestinian terrorists murdered 37 Israeli civilians by dedicating a monument in a square in Ramallah to terrorist Dalal Mughrabi, who led the bus hijacking in 1978. So you are talking about your alleged peace partners. You are talking about your co-workers for peace, that you're going to be neighbors now with a two-state solution, that they are dedicating monuments, the government dedicating monuments to someone who masterminded the slaughter of your own people. This is unconscionable. This is reminding us why, in the views of many, there cannot be a two-state solution. Mughrabi Square is adorned with a large monument in the shape of what the PA tells its people is Palestine, a map that includes all of the state of Israel. This is what Palestinian kids learn in their textbooks, that Palestine is currently where Israel is, and the so-called occupied territories, Gaza and the West Bank, that's Palestine. You said, no, there's Israel and there's the Palestinian territories. No, it's all Palestine, according to the Palestinians. All according to the Palestinians. In the center of the monument, there is an image of terrorist Mugabe holding a rifle. PATV News broadcast the message of a cleric from the event, indicating that the lesson that the Palestinians take from the Mugabe attack is that murder is the way to, quote, liberate the homeland. This is not about two states. This is not about living side by side and in peace. This is a matter of murdering the Jews, annihilating the Jews, exterminating the Jews, driving the Jews out so you can, quote, liberate the homeland. Dalal, God bless her, this female martyr, she taught us how we can liberate the homeland. This is what a Muslim cleric said. We all see her as a model and a symbol for us. How can there be negotiations when this is what's being promoted, when this is what's being celebrated, when this is what's being taught to the nation, the Palestinian people? How could there be friendly negotiations? Radical Islam is the elephant in the room. Radical Islam is the elephant in the room, and it does not have room for Israel. It does not have room for the Jewish state. It does not. The glorification of murder is not only odious, Marcus says, it is also a slap in the face to the Israeli and U.S. governments who fought against this act. In 2010, Palestinian Media Watch first reported that the Palestinian Authority intended to name the square after Mugabe. U.S. Vice President Biden happened to be in Israel at the time, and Israeli news reported that Prime Minister Netanyahu asked Biden to put pressure on the PA to cancel the event. Abbas gave in and canceled the event, although Fatah officials participated in a popular inauguration. 20 members of U.S. Congress then signed a letter to Abbas condemning the terror glorification. Secretary of State Clinton likewise condemned it back in March of 2010. However, last week, while Israel was busy with upcoming elections and the U.S. focused on Iran and the Islamic State, the PA chose to glorify this mass murderer of Israeli civilians. This is part of the TV report. Just got a minute. Let me read a bit more. PA TV newsreader. On the 31st anniversary of her martyrdom, martyr Dalal Mughrabi Square was inaugurated in Al-Sara'at in the Ramallah and El Bira district. The participants in the opening event said that this act is a gesture to the martyr Dalal Mughrabi to give her a portion of her reward. And so the square will serve as witness that our people will not forget its heroes and fighters. And the Minister of Women's Affairs, Rabiha Dihab, said it is an eternal day and a painful anniversary, but it also gives us energy, honor, and power on this day, the anniversary of the martyrdom of the fighter Dalal Mughrabi. She who commanded a squad of self-sacrificing fighters defined return of refugees in her own unique way and returned to Palestine to liberate Palestine. In other words, kill the Jews, get them out of the land, and the Palestinian Authority will make you into a hero or heroine and celebrate you. You're going to have that as your neighboring friendly state? I don't think it works like that, friends. Let's come back to reality. All right. Make sure you go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article to read my article, Can Israel Survive? Also, while you're there, click on the special resource offer. Five of the most important books I've written, ones that'll shake you, stir you, equip you, help you. We've cut the price in half, and we're paying the postage. So it's a great time to get these for yourself, for friends, as many copies as you want. You can call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or watch a video where I tell you more about the books that's on the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And while you're there, if you live anywhere in the greater Maryland area, come see me. I'll be speaking at Emmanuel's Church in Silver Spring, Maryland, tomorrow night. Friday night as well as Saturday morning. The conference will continue with John Burness, worship leader Marty Goetz, and my dear friend Scott Volk. All the info is on my website at the itinerary. My bottom line today, when Prime Minister Netanyahu says there will be no two-state solution, it may seem extreme, but it could also be realistic and pragmatic.